Can you hear me?
Oh, hello, Catherine.
Hi.
Hi. Oh my gosh, I can hear you loud and clear. I'm so happy.
That's perfect. I was a bit worried. The internet's been very slow tonight.
Oh, I was worried too, because I just thought there's a million things that could go wrong. But this is great. Thank you so much for making the time.
I'm talking to Catherine Mallett, and you can tell the phone call is a little choppy. This is because she is calling from Antarctica.
Welcome to Rework, a podcast by Basecamp about the better way to work and run your business. I'm Sean Hildner.
I'm Waylon Wong, and I will let our guest today introduce herself.
My name is Catherine Mallard. I'm an astrophysicist, actually. I work for the IceCube Collaboration, which is a neutrino detector here at South Pole.
Waylon, this story hits on a couple of my most nerdy interests, mainly polar exploration and astrophysics. Actually, do you mind if we do a little physics lesson first to help explain what Catherine's doing in the South Pole?
I'm all ears, Professor Hildner.
Okay. The IceCube Neutrino Observatory is this big scientific experiment where Catherine and her colleagues study these tiny subatomic particles called neutrinos. And by tiny, I mean really, really tiny, which makes them extremely hard to detect. The IceCube is basically about 5,000 light sensors arrayed over a cubic kilometer sunk deep in the Antarctic ice.
Tell me more about these neutrinos.
So violent cosmic events like exploding stars send neutrinos hurtling through space at essentially the speed of light. Some of those neutrinos are going to pass through the Earth, where scientists like Catherine can study them.
And how come this has to be done in Antarctica?
So I think this is the coolest part. Coolest. Anyway, to avoid interference from background radiation, neutrino detectors need to be buried deep underground. They also need some sort of transparent medium. Some detectors consist of enormous tanks of water that have been built in abandoned mines. IceCube, however, uses the thick, pure, and ultra-transparent ice that's found at the South Pole.
Oh, that's clever.
When a neutrino comes through the Earth, it starts interacting and will lose energy by emitting a light blue light. And light blue light is what we detect in IceCube, so to say.
Those little flashes of blue light get picked up by IceCube's optical sensors. By tracking which sensors trigger in which order, Catherine and her colleagues can figure out the direction the neutrino was traveling and how much energy it had. And that's the end of Sean's physics lesson. But Waylon, you didn't land on this story because you were looking to unlock the secrets of the cosmos, were you?
No, that was just a bonus. But I was introduced to Catherine actually in a more roundabout way. I'd gotten an email from someone doing PR for an anti-malware software company called MCSoft. They're headquartered in New Zealand, but have people working remotely all over the world, just like Basecamp. And the PR person mentioned they had an employee in Antarctica. I seized on that right away because I thought it'd be neat to do a story about what it's like to work not just remotely, but extremely remotely from Antarctica.
And I started working part-time for them because they needed someone that speaks foreign languages, and I happened to know the ones that they were looking for. So that was really nice. And when I applied here, actually, people told me that the internet here is so bad that there's no way I could continue with my job. At the moment, this is not necessarily true. However, we are not sure how much of the satellites that we currently have are going to be operational throughout the entire winter, which is why we took the precaution of basically freezing my employment for the time that I'm working for IceCube, and probably go back to them once I finish up here.
Okay, so what's the risk with the satellite in the winter? And that starts fairly soon, right? You're coming up on that season now.
Yes. So it doesn't have directly to do with the winter. What's happening is that all the science data that is currently being produced here is transmitted throughout a dedicated satellite. That satellite is only used for the science data. We don't necessarily have access to any of its internet, so to say.
But that science data satellite is reaching the end of its life.
And they've been expecting it to crash into the atmosphere for a while now. And current forecasts say this might happen in April. If that happens, this nice satellite that we're calling on at the moment will become a dedicated satellite for science data only. And we'll have to go back to Skynet, which is a great name for a satellite. And that's going to be the kind of internet where you have to wait a minute to open up a page. And then actually working remotely is more or less unfeasible.
It's funny because when I was going back and forth with the PR person about interviewing Catherine, he told me that she had to stop working for MCSoft because of bandwidth limitations. I'm using air quotes around bandwidth limitations. And at first, I thought that was an annoying corporate euphemism for getting laid off. But as you heard Catherine explain, it's literal bandwidth. Catherine and I were able to do an audio call because right now, where she is in the South Pole, they get 4 hours of good internet a day for personal stuff while the satellite passes overhead. And that four-hour window shifts by a few minutes each day. When Catherine and I talked, it was 7 p.m. her time and midnight my time. It took a non-zero amount of effort to coordinate this call, and that gave me a very small taste of how Catherine's work life in Antarctica is unique. This episode ended up being about what it's like to live and work with a small group of people in very close proximity, isolated from the rest of the world. It's about self-care and working calmly in extreme conditions, which is very rework after all. So let's get back to Catherine's story. When she first heard about the opportunity to work at Ice Cube, she was early in her studies to get a PhD.
PhDs take a long time. So when I first heard about this opportunity, it was more of a dream. I didn't actually expect it to come true. And as things progressed, more and more of my friends from the university spent a year here, and they all came back and they were all thrilled. They all said, this has been the best time of their life. If I have the opportunity, I should definitely go. So once I finished my PhD in Berlin, I applied directly. And they interviewed me, but they didn't pick me. And then I reapplied this year, and actually this year they picked me, so I'm really happy about that.
Can you talk about the kind of preparation you had to do? How much time did you have? And, you know, were you given materials and resources about everything you needed to do before departing?
So the preparation is actually really thorough. In this case, the initial job interview was back in March. And at that time, they did a lot of medical checks, because the medical coverage here is fairly limited, so they want to make sure that we really don't have any pre-existing conditions. We were flown to Madison in Wisconsin in August 2018, and then we spent 2 months in Madison preparing for our job. They taught us what kind of equipment we have here, what are the typical failure modes, what kind of fixes we can implement.
After the training in Wisconsin, the team was sent to Denver, Colorado for the next stage.
And what happens there is that, one, we have a team building event so that we get to know all the people that we will be spending a year with. And the other thing is they're a fairly small station in winter. So a lot of the jobs that are usually done by other people have to be by us. What happened in Denver is that we got a crash on how to be a firefighter. And I will be part of the official fire brigade for the winter.
Oh, my goodness. So what kind of training did you get to become a firefighter?
We did get to climb through burning houses. It was actually pretty cool. The first thing you need to learn is how to put on that gear correctly, because if you put it on wrongly and you go into a fire, it's going to be pretty, pretty bad.
Firefighting is even trickier at the pole because it's too cold for water-based fire retardants.
And we actually train once a week here at South Pole so that we can be prepared. And then once a month, we have a drill where we simulate a fire and we have to go in and fight that.
What kind of mental health assessment did they have to do? Because I imagine that's just as important as the physical aspect.
What is done is that actually during the team building, we spend a week together for team building. And there's a psychologist present during the entire week that more or less observes us and also teaches us how to cope with anger or disagreement within the group. For example, a very extrovert person or a very introvert person could have issues coping here because either he doesn't find enough contact or he finds he cannot retrieve himself enough from the people and get enough alone time. So they're looking for a very specific type of person.
Sure. Do you consider yourself more introverted or extroverted?
That's a really good question. I feel like I'm probably an introvert at heart, but an extrovert in daily life. It's really hard to explain. I do need my private time, and I do go to my room and spend time by myself, but I also really enjoy being out and spending time with the people here, actually.
that probably makes you ideal then, because you're kind of right down the middle and you can be in kind of both scenarios.
Yeah, I can only guess at that, but I kind of hope so.
What was the team building like? I imagine it's fairly important since you're going to be in close quarters with this team for a long time.
Yeah, it was a combination of more or less like lectures, especially on how to cope with frustration, how to resolve conflict, how to vocalize disagreement, because there's a lot of cases where it's the small things. And apparently this is a known issue here. It's like if you have so many people in a small room, towards the end of the year, it's the way he holds the spoon, it's the way he chews his potatoes, the small things that really get you going and really annoy you. And one of the things you need to learn is like to recognize that this is really not a big deal. And the other thing is to be able to vocalize and say, look, could you possibly hold the spoon differently rather than just do it at some point and make the entire atmosphere awkward for everyone?
What were some of the tips you got about what to bring and not bring?
We spend a lot of time inside, and inside I think it's 65 degrees. I'm not sure. What you really need is clothing that is actually quite similar for when you're inside the station. And then we got some very specific kind of thermal underwear to buy for when we have to be outside. And the real trick everyone told me is layers, layers, layers. Like, don't rely on one pant to save you. Like, you want to have your long underwear, and then you want to have a pant, and then you want to have a windbreaker.
You know, did you bring any sentimental mementos with you? You know, things that reminded you of friends and family back home, since you knew you weren't going to see them for a year?
Just because I am a nature fan, I made sure that I have like big pictures and posters of trees and stuff that I can put up in my room and pretend to see something alive rather than just snow. A lot of things I wouldn't estimate crucial, I really think they will lighten up the mood. I got some, it's called hair wax, where you can color like strands of hair. And I feel like this is definitely not something I must have. But it's been bringing me a lot of joy just to walk around with a strand of pink or blue or green hair every now and then. So I'm happy I have it.
What did they tell you about how much you would be able to be outside versus inside?
So technically, I'm allowed to be outside as much as I want. Practically, it does get cold. It's cold enough that you want to have your face covered. And then if you're wearing glasses, what happens is like you will breathe and the breath will go up into your glasses. They will fog, and then the fog will freeze, which kind of limits the time you can spend outside. But especially now in summer, the sun's up 24 hours a day. You can easily spend 6 to 8 hours outside. In winter, it's harder because the temperatures drop a lot and it gets really cold. And then you get to the limit of your clothing can actually do. But still, like, especially when the aurora's out, people do spend a lot of time outside. So yeah, last year's winter over told me that he was actually outside every day because he liked being outside.
What was it like when you first landed? You landed first in McMurdo, right, before you went to the ice cube?
Yes.
And what was it like to step off the plane?
It was really surreal. So you do not fly with like normal airplanes, but with a military plane. They actually don't really have windows. So you're kind of blind to where you're getting and where you're landing. And landing there and then getting off the plane and seeing the ice, but also there's big mountains in McMurdo that you can see, especially Erebus, which is the active volcano. That was really, really cool. And it was very different from what I then later on would see at South Pole, because South Pole is completely flat. It's a big, wide, flat surface. So the change from McMurdo to South Pole for me was much more surreal than the change I got from New Zealand to McMurdo. Because McMurdo, you can see mountains, you can see some rocks. It looks like a snow-covered countryside, except there's missing living plants and stuff.
When you felt that cold for the first time, did it feel really different? Is there a specific cold you now associate with the South Pole?
Yes. It's like, it's a funny feeling when the hair in your nose frees.
Oh.
And it is. And that is something I had never experienced anywhere else before.
Let me ask you, how do you organize your work day? It sounds like you're fairly flexible and you said you're allowed to go outside for as long as you feel comfortable and the conditions cooperate. And you also have a lot of research you have to get done. You have to be a firefighter and you have a lot of responsibilities. How does your day usually unfold?
I guess it comes down to priorities, basically. Everyone agrees that if there's a fire emergency or firefighting training, that takes precedence. And then when I have a normal work day now in summer, it basically means that I'm here to support the scientists that are currently here. In winter, what it's going to be is like I will be getting up and I need to be monitoring the experiment. I need to make sure that everything's running smoothly. And if something goes wrong, I get a page and then I have to be really fast to get to a computer as quickly as possible and fix that. And when I say I actually mean we. So we're two people doing the same job. We basically alternate on a weekly basis the paging system so that we can be sure that we may be able to sleep at least every second week.
Is it hard when there's so much sunlight to kind of figure out a natural rhythm for when your day begins and ends and how to draw a line between kind of like the work day and when you're off the clock?
It kind of is, yes. I know that for the first month and a half, I would be baffled when I looked outside. I'm like, oh, it's bright. It's not that late. I look at the clock. It's 11 p.m. I'm like, why?
When you're there in the ice cube, you had mentioned kind of what the ice cube itself looks like. And then are there buildings attached to it where you're living and taking your meals and that sort of thing? Or do you have to like go outside to go to those buildings?
So the ice cube itself is a dedicated building, which is about half a mile away from the general station. And then the general station hosts almost everything else. We also have a work area here. So unless we have physical failure inside the hardware, we don't necessarily need to go out. We have a music room, we have a crafts room, and a reading library. Oh, and a movie room as well. Because also we have like communal showers and bathrooms, and the rooms are really, really small.
Do you have your own room or do you have to share?
This is one of the luxuries of South Pole. This is, for example, not the case in McMurdo. Here, everyone has their own room, which is really nice if you want to have some private you time.
I mean, that's kind of an interesting aspect, I imagine, of this assignment, right, is that you are living in very close proximity with your coworkers, which is not the case for most folks, right?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting in the sense that you get to know them a lot better than you would really do. On the other hand, a lot of the work is very segmented. So I share a room with the other scientists, but for example, the carpenters, I barely see at work because they work so far away from where we work that we only cross ways at lunch and at dinner.
Are there team building activities that continue to take place while you're all there just to kind of, keep the bonds going?
Yes. So we're actually going to have like a second dedicated team building session on the ice with everyone who is going to spend the winter present. And then what we like hands-on meetings where we can meet and just bring up all the issues that might cause tension and hopefully resolve them before they cause tensions.
What kind of preparation are you going to do for the winter when the sun goes down and is not going to come up for many, many months?
So one of the big preparations we're doing at the moment is we're digging out all the buildings. There's a lot of snowdrift over the winter. The other thing is everyone's going to leave. So by February 15th, all the people that only spend the summer here will have left, and we will only be the 42 people that spend the winter here, or around 42, the final number is not quite sure. And then there has been a very long tradition of watching the thing when station closes. So the first thing that's going to happen is probably that movie.
Have you seen The Thing before, or will this be your first time?
This will actually be my first time, so I'm quite excited for it.
Fire's got the temperature up all over the camp. Won't last long, though.
Neither will we.
How will we make it?
Maybe we should.
Besides the physical preparation and logistics that you have to do for the winter, is there kind of any emotional and mental preparation they give you since, you know, you're not going to get that exposure to light and it's going to be potentially it's going to feel more isolating?
Yeah, there's a couple of things you do. Like we actually can get mail down here. So if among the people that spend the winters that they get a midwinter package, these are packages that are packed by people that know you. And they send them down and you open them only on June 21st when there's the mid of winter. And so you get something new and exciting in the mid of winter to make the wait until the station reopening a little shorter. I don't know what's in my package, obviously, because I haven't opened it yet. But I would suspect it's going to be some crisps or like your favorite sweets or something. Because what happens is like we get all our food provided for and it's actually really good food. But you will end up eating the same thing over and over again. And we always have cookies out, for example, at the station. It's mostly Oreos. And once you've eaten Oreos for 3 months, you want something different. So a wafer becomes super exciting.
Do you get a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables? Are they kind of all flown in at the beginning of the season and just kept frozen or, you know, somehow kept fresh?
So I saw an apple today. I was really excited. We get fresh fruit in occasionally. This year has been complicated due to weather and other things. The flights haven't been as frequent as they would normally be. Probably we haven't had fresh vegetables maybe since Christmas and before that, since the end of November, roughly. But I do absolutely expect that they will make an effort to bring things in before the station closes so that we do have some fresh fruit at the beginning of our winter. And then we actually get to entertain a greenhouse here. So we will be able to grow salads.
Are there aspects of life on the South Pole that, you know, have really surprised you in how much you've enjoyed them or how special they are versus what life is like back home?
A lot of the things become insanely easy here. I actually noticed this in particular when going back to McMurdo, since my workplace, the gym, my room, and the galley are all within 2 minutes walking distance. You save an insane amount of time on commuting.
Yeah.
And I've been a lot more active here because, I mean, the people that would motivate you to go and work out are the people you spend dinner with. And you usually don't have a good excuse at dinner not to join them. I've been very, very active here, which has been really nice. We have a volleyball group that's actually playing right now. We have a basketball group that's playing on Mondays. We have dodgeball on days that I've never participated in. We have a climbing wall, which is really cool. We have a badminton set up for Sundays. They've come to realize that one of the important things is ways to occupy yourself in winter, because we don't work 24 hours a day. And if you work 8 hours a day, that leaves 16 hours where you have nothing to do. If you sit in darkness, this can get depressing very fast. So they have put a very strong emphasis on opportunities to keep yourself busy. And this is why we have the gym and the crafts room and the movie room, so that we can spend time together. I talked to someone who's been wintering for a long time just recently, and he said it's been, he's actually really disappointed about the internet now. What happens is that everyone after dinner just goes to their room to go on the internet, and there's actually very little communal activity compared to 10, 15, 20 years ago when there was really nothing else to do, and then they would do things together. So it's going to change, though, because the satellite doesn't come up every day at the same time. It comes up 4 minutes earlier every day, which means that by March or April, the satellite will be down by 6 p.m., at which point there might be more interest in doing other stuff.
I mean, it might be too early to say, but do you picture yourself ever going back to a traditional job where you're commuting to an office every day? Or do you think that it's kind of ruined you for the traditional office setting?
I think this is what's going to happen. Like, I came here and I was really sure that once I finished this job, I would go back to Germany. I would look for like a fixed job in a office, and I would be very happy, settle down and just build a life. And I've already slowly shifted towards, well, I could get like 3 months of traveling and then go back. So it's very flexible in that sense. I'm pretty sure at some point I will go back to Europe because my entire family is there and all my friends are there, and I miss them. So I want to be back.
Is there a possibility of returning to the Ice Cube? Are there people who do kind of repeat tours? I don't know if you have to reapply kind of every year, but is there a possibility that you could come back if you liked it enough?
Yeah, you would have to reapply. And there have been people that have done more than one tour. I think none have done more than two tours. What is also very common that I only learned here is people are working the winter here at South Pole and then doing the summer in Alaska. And it seems like these communities are very intertwined, which surprised me as well. I didn't expect there to be so much exchange between those two places.
I mean, it must just be the most intense bonding experience, kind of sharing this time with the colleagues that you have. It's just, I can't imagine what that's like. It must be incredibly bonding.
It is great, especially because you go through team bowling and you come out with a bunch of friends. And I mean, not everyone's going to be a close friend at the end of the year. Actually, from what I've heard, no one's going to be your friend at the end of the year. Once you're off the ice, you do realize that that spoon thing was really not a big deal and you can talk to each other again. I have heard of stories of people that would not talk to each other at pole, and already when they were landing in McMurdo, they realized they were both being total dickheads and they reconciliated in McMurdo before they made it off Antarctica. So it does take a toll on you, but it will also make you fuse together more.
Rework is produced by Waylon Wong and me, Sean Hildner. Our theme music is Broken by Design by Clipart.
Thanks to Brent Callow for his help with this story. We'll post show notes with links to the Ice Cube website at rework.fm so you can nerd out about neutrinos if you want and see some photos of life at the South Pole.
What is your favorite scene in the thing?
My favorite scene. I watched most of it with my hand covering my face. So the only scenes I really saw were of Kurt Russell pulling on a leather jacket to run outside without zipping it, because apparently that is all you need in the South Pole.
That's amazing.
No, I like the part.
You didn't see the little head run away?
I think I did see that because I didn't look.
Or the defibrillators, and it goes, the guy's stomach opens up and eats the,
that was,
his hands
That was really scary.
God, I love that movie so much.
That was really scary. Okay, actually, my favorite part is that really tense scene when they have, what do they do with that needle? No, it's an electrified needle or something.
I think they just heat up a piece of wire to burn the blood.
Yeah, and they're like sticking it into these individual petri dishes of blood.
Everyone's tied to the couch.
It's so tense. And then like those two guys on the couch are like trying to get away from
the guy who's changing.
Yeah. And they look genuinely hysterical. Did I tell you that I only saw the thing for the first time over the holidays?
You did.
Yeah. And I think we already discussed this. But first of all, I did not realize until the end of the movie that one of the characters was named Windows. I thought that every time they said Windows, it was Kurt Russell ordering people to check the windows. I was really confused.
We have this tradition. I think it started in college where the first snowfall in Chicago, not even the first GD week of winter, as they say in the movie, the first snowfall in Chicago, we open up the windows, put on our big winter jackets for the first time and watch the thing.
You open the windows too?
Yeah, it has to be cold in the living room, you know?
So you're talking about a person named Windows you're friends with, or windows?
No, these are sort of the glass things you can open from your apartment.
Thank you for clarifying. Uh-huh.
All right. I think that's good for Thing Talk. This has been Thing Talk with Thing 1 and Thing 2.
That's good.